San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer for It's Your Money and Your Life. Welcoming you over 50,000 watts of power. We reach not just San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up to Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour, my illustrious co-host. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a philanthropist. He's a family office advisor to several high net worth families. He's a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable of San Diego. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great, Joe.
That's terrific. We had a pretty great week, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, on Monday we went to the inauguration.
We most certainly
did. The local inauguration.
That's right. And I don't think it's ever been held in Balboa Park before. At least, I think it's usually at Golden Hall or downtown, isn't it?
But I think that was the first time.
That was terrific.
Balboa Park. It was in the Balboa Park Club.
Correct. Yeah. And, of course, congratulations to Mayor Filner and all the council members who were sworn in on Monday. It was a packed overflow house and some nice cake and coffee to boot afterward. And yesterday I attended City Club with our friend George Mitrovich, who we probably should get on the show at some point in time. He's been around quite a while and knows quite a few people. But Mayor Filner was a speaker at La Jolla Country Day, and Bronwyn, his fiancée, was also there. That was quite a nice time. I tell you, I feel a new energy in this city. I hope even people who didn't vote for Mayor Filner feel the same way. But I think there's going to be some bright days ahead. And Bronwyn was on this morning on a talk show. And I guess she's going to volunteer. And she's passionate about two causes, the homeless and the disabled. So we'll see what she can do in that regard. Actually, she wants to aggregate a lot of other groups working in those fields, and I think they're going to accomplish quite a bit. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this film, Chasing Ice, which is a documentary playing at the La Jolla Landmark Theaters. It already ran last week at the Ken. If you are skeptical at all about climate change, you really need to see this, and even if you don't quite accept all the science, the dedication of these scientists who get out in these... on these glaciers in the most remote parts of the globe, you have to respect that kind of work. I do not like cold and ice. I'm from the Midwest. I moved out here in the 70s, and I'm still thawing out, Richard. So I admire that. You being a Southern California boy, you didn't see too much snow in your life, have you?
Well, we don't really even have seasons here in San Diego. But any day where I can't wear my shorts is a bad day.
And just a shout out to my mom and her chihuahua are visiting from the frozen tundra of the Midwest. So hello, Mom, and hello, Belle. Your mom listens too, right, Richard?
Yeah, my mom listens. I was out at my mom's house for dinner because it's almost her birthday.
Uh-huh.
I can't come visit her on her birthday because we're going to Disneyland on that day.
Gotcha.
Which is in a few days. But she says I can't tell anybody how old she is, and she doesn't want to have her birthday recognized. So happy birthday, Mom.
Yeah,
happy birthday. I didn't tell anybody how old you are going to be.
You know what? I don't even tell people my age anymore, so I don't blame her.
Well, Joe, when I turned 50, somebody said, Richard, don't worry about turning 50. It's like the new 30. I said, well, it feels like it's the new 70. Okay.
By the way, how's your eye surgery going? How's the prognosis? Everything
so far, so good. I go back and see my eye surgeon, who's a miracle worker, on next Wednesday.
Wow.
And I have to get my stitches removed.
Well, you know, you're a walking miracle yourself.
I guess.
Of course, sometime when we have more time, because we have a terrific guest tonight, and I don't want to leave waiting too long, but we'll get into some of that history, how you've lost your eyesight and came back.
Anyway, for the first time in 54 years, without a contact lens on my right eye, I can read like a billboard next to the freeway.
Wow.
I couldn't even do that when I was a kid.
Miracle.
And I knew how to read.
Yeah.
Still do.
Absolutely. Anyway, and of course, the Billie Jean King film is, and Bobby Riggs film is in process. I guess it's in its final edit, and we should be seeing, I guess, a preview of that within the few weeks now.
And I hate the title.
I know. I think it's just going to be Battle of the Sexes, The Battle of the Sexes. I thought they kind of updated a little bit, but...
Oh, that is so 1973.
Well, that's kind of the point, but 40 years later, so we'll see. I think they're going to do a great job and bring out a lot of stories and backstories that people were not aware of to make it even a more phenomenal viewing experience. So anyway.
We'll see. I've been focusing on my book about the same topic.
Right.
Which has a
right.
much more interesting title than that. But anyway, let's get to our guest.
Why don't we? Why don't you introduce our guest?
Jason Kruger, you're our guest tonight. Everybody, Jason Kruger's our guest tonight, and he's a CPA, but he's not a normal CPA, but I say that in a good way. And he's the CEO of Signature Analytics. Jason, welcome. Thanks for coming out on this cold evening.
Thanks, guys. Not too cold, though.
Pleasure. Well, I mean, by San Diego
compared
standards.
To the Midwest.
I know, yeah. But by San Diego standards, I had to wear a sweater into the studio.
And we have to remember that Jason attended the great unveiling of the Dr. Seuss plaque at the La Valencia July 8th. So
he was there.
It was great having dinner with him and that large group that night. And there's some new changes coming up for the La Valencia. We'll get into that in a future show. But anyway, that was a pretty special night, wasn't it?
It was great. In fact, the guest was a little bit more prestigious than I am, I think. Dick Enberg was the guest that night.
Oh, and, that night. Yeah, at 7. Yeah. And then, of course,
that night, yeah.
And then the last time you were a guest on the show, we had none other than Jim Lampley for a few minutes at the top of the hour. So, good things precede you, Jason. What the heck?
That's right.
So, Jason, you have a good thing that's going to be following you in about 6 weeks. What's that?
That's right. I had mentioned last time I was on the show, I don't think it had set in at that point, that my wife is pregnant. She's due in the middle of January. So we got about 6 weeks, God willing, that everything goes well. Hopefully in about 6 weeks, we should have a new baby girl in the house.
Wow. So. Have you selected a name yet? Or
we have. We're going to go with the name Quinn.
Quinn.
Yes. Q-U-I-N-N.
Nice.
Yes.
Excellent.
Nice. And I saw you and the missus and the baby out at the Oceanside Turkey Trot.
That's right. To all that have not been to Richard's Oceanside once a year Turkey Trot, I definitely recommend it. What was it, about 10,000 people?
They said 9,000 runners and about 14,000 people, if you count everybody who wound up at the finish line.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. And you get to see Richard running around in a turkey outfit,
you do.
I believe.
Yep, you do.
And the money goes to how many charities, Richard?
Well, let's see. $5 of every entry fee goes to the charity of your choice. So the runner who signs up gets to direct that. That's usually the Oceanside schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then our profits go to the Oceanside Boys and Girls Club to fund their after-school running and fitness programs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other charities that sort of piggyback off our platform. So in addition to the $5, it gets directed there. They do their own fundraisers. I guess most notably the Austin Bice Foundation. Mm-hmm. And
of course the Move Your Feet Before You Eat Foundation, right?
Yeah, although we're more of a conduit. We call ourselves a conduit charity. We don't really raise funds for any specific purpose. So we help other charities and causes raise funds through our programs.
So you're kind of like a United Way somewhat.
Exactly,
right?
Because we don't really give out grants or do other things. And we are actually involved in the first steps of a public-private partnership with the city of Carlsbad for next holiday season, holidays of 2013. We'd like to get an ice skating rink out by the big Christmas tree that goes up into Carlsbad because it really, I think, encourages families to come out and do something together.
That'd be cool.
Ice skating does. It won't be real ice. It'll be like that synthetic ice, but it's just as good as the real thing.
I think there's one out at the Hotel Del and one by, and then one down by Horton Plaza, right?
Correct. But we're into doing things that bring 2-3 generations of family members out to do stuff together because that doesn't happen as much as it used to or as much as it should.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So anyway, we got a nice grant from the Servant Leadership Institute, so thank you guys for doing that.
And, yeah, it's a fantastic event. I definitely recommend it to anyone to attend next year. This was our first time, but I'm sure we'll be back next year. My wife was works with Viasat, and they were a big part of the Austin Bice Foundation as well. And so we were part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
And I think Assembly Member Nathan Fletcher said he would have gone, but he was out of town. But has he attended in the past? I think he may have.
I think he did once, but yeah. we had a lot of people in there who are, you would know who they are. It's amazing the turnout that we get.
And it's always Thanksgiving morning.
It's always Thanksgiving morning.
Okay.
And if you come out and do that, Joe, you can eat more turkey.
I'm trying to cut down all the way around. So my mother's chihuahua is losing weight, but I still have a little ways to go. So,
all right, but let's get back to our guest. So Jason Kruger, you're a CPA, but you're sort of different as a CPA compared to most CPAs. I know, but I mean that in a good way. Can you tell everybody a little bit about your background and what makes you a little bit different than most CPAs on this planet?
Sure. I think when 95% of the people outside of the accounting world hear the word CPA, they think of taxes. That's typically what I get asked first thing once I tell them that I'm a CPA. But my background is more in the financial accounting aspects of businesses. I have some tax background, but not necessarily the detail to call myself a tax specialist or even to provide tax services to my clients. So my background started in public accounting. Worked for a smaller firm here in San Diego, and then I moved over to one of the big four firms, Deloitte & Touche here in San Diego, as a on the audit side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, when you're just out of college, you basically determine at that point, typically, do you want to get into tax or do you want to get into audit? And the audit side always appealed to me a little bit more. I always had enjoyed traveling around to different clients, meeting different people, working on different engagements. And so we focus more on the financial statement audit side of our of the business.
More detective work, right?
Right, right. performing work to ensure that the financial statements of our clients are accurate and can be counted on by the individuals that are that are relying on us to do the work appropriately.
And who are some of the individuals who rely on those financial statements?
Well, it depends on what the company is needs a financial statement audit for. Obviously, if it's a public company, they're required to have quarterly reviews, which are 10-Qs, and an annual financial statement audit, which is a 10-K. Those are legally required by those companies are legally required to obtain those audits. Many of our clients, I'd say majority of the clients, and especially in San Diego being such a general market with a number of mid-sized to smaller businesses, any companies that may have a line of credit with a bank, may have other types of financing, may have other investors that are required either reviewed or audited financial statements, that's typically when an audit is required, and it's typically by the bank or by the investors of the company.
But now you don't do audits. You're doing something even, well, different than that, right?
That's right. I'm utilizing my experience of 10 years in the audit side to about 4 years ago started my own company. We're called Signature Analytics, and what we do is we provide outsourced accounting support for our clients. We either act as the internal accounting function of our clients, or we support their internal accounting function. Depending on the size and the complexity of the accounting department, we will either essentially be their accounting department, or they may have internal accounting staff, and we can support them and be very flexible in supporting them in whatever their needs may be.
So you use an interesting term. You say an outsourced accounting function. You know, a lot of people don't like the term outsource or outsourcing. Lou Dobbs being, the leading
critic
of outsourcing. Now, you don't necessarily mean shipping work off to the Philippines. What do you mean by the term outsource?
No, outsourcing in our term is basically instead of a company, a small to mid-sized business hiring an internal accounting staff, meaning a full-time, it could be as low as a full-time bookkeeper, full-time AR, full-time AP, full-time controller, full-time CFO. That can be very expensive for many companies. And as a result, in some cases, to save costs, they will not hire a CFO at all. They will not hire an accounting manager or a controller at all. And they'll try to get by on as limited cost as possible. The approach that we take is that we provide the high level of accounting expertise for our clients, from starting with the low level of the bookkeeper level all the way up through CFO. And we provide that resource to our clients as needed, depending on what the needs of the client and the company are. So we provide that flexibility. That they can utilize our expertise to really enhance the financial and accounting function of their business.
Outstanding. Well, look, we have to take a break right now, but let's come right back after these announcements. We are back with It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Nisio and our guest, Jason Kruger. Richard, take it away.
We are back. And before we went to the break, we're talking about this concept of outsourced accounting. I, of course, have been in the accounting business myself since 1979, which is 33 years. I've been a CPA for going on 30 years, and I've seen huge changes in the accounting profession. And I think there's going to be a continuing trend for businesses to outsource their accounting function. Yes, because of cost. Jason mentioned a big reason most firms decide to do this is cost. But Jason, I know from where I sit as a CPA who helps business owners and successful businesses as well, there's many, many more reasons why somebody would want to consider a more modern approach to their accounting function than the old-fashioned model of bring a bunch of accountants in-house and have a bunch of accountants and bookkeepers sitting around your office. A couple of the reasons that come to my mind are the ability to access better talent as well as the ability to improve or have better internal controls. Most of our listeners probably don't know what internal controls are or why they are so important, but can you talk about that some more?
Sure. As you mentioned, the outside of the cost aspect, the experience aspect is obviously very important to our clients. The internal controls of a company is essentially small to mid-sized businesses have a very difficult time managing the internal controls of their company. And from a high level, taking a non-accounting language approach, basically what the internal controls are set in place to ensure that that individuals are acting appropriately and in the best interest of the company from a financial perspective. Good internal controls can detect and alleviate any potential for fraudulent financial or accounting items or things that can occur in a business.
Anywhere, also known as malfeasance.
Right. Anything from misappropriation of assets, which is effectively stealing from the company, to fraudulent financial reporting, which is basically showing financial information or more profit than maybe you have, less profit than maybe you have in some cases, depending on what the best interests of the individuals are. So it's a deterrent from internal controls is a deterrent from those things happening. And what we do from an outside service provider is we are acting on behalf of the company, but we provide that control as well. Because we are not an employee of the company, we don't have a vested interest in that company, and it's how well it's doing. So, for example, we're working with a company right now that is going through a financial statement audit. They are a venture-backed company. Typically, venture-backed companies are fairly top-heavy because they have they need to have high-level individuals on their executive team. But they're very cost conscious as well, and they saw the value that we can provide them. And one thing that the auditors can rely heavily on is the fact that we are providing the accounting accounting resources for the business, because we alleviate a lot of internal control potential internal control issues that may occur.
Right. To me, it's one of the issues that owners of businesses frequently don't consider when they're making decisions about how to staff an accounting department. It's usually only about cost, and there's many, many other reasons. Mm-hmm. But to me, internal controls being probably one of the best other reasons to use this new model of accounting, because it just, financial information, all information moves so fast these days that I think old-fashioned models probably don't fit as well as they did 20, 30 years ago. That's why they're old-fashioned now.
Right. In fact, we have several clients, companies that we work with that have had a fraudulent activity occur in the past, and that's one reason that they switched away from the more standard standard process of hiring an internal accountant to handle all of their books and records. Because a small company, sometimes the business owner or the CEO is typically an entrepreneurial individual working or focusing more on the sales aspects of the business. They put a lot of faith in the individual that they hire to account for and to be their accountant. And sometimes they put too much faith and too much flexibility for that accountant, and they end up fraudulent activity ends up occurring. They steal funds, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, the common case is that you have an in-house bookkeeper or an accountant who basically does too many functions. They send out the bills, they collect the payments, they pay the checks, they reconcile the bank account, they make the bank deposits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're doing payroll.
They're doing everything, and so there's no internal control whatsoever. That is to say, the oversight function, which should be in the hands of the CEO, who's very busy growing the business or whatever, that that person is doing to make the business successful. There's no checks and balances, in other words, and so it does. Now, again, 99.9% of people who are in these roles are very honest, capable, ethical people. But the point is if there's no internal control, the one bad apple can really get away with lots and lots of money.
Mm-hmm. And in many cases, the situation can cause somebody to do what they normally would not do. If the situation presents itself where the person's in a place where they see how easy it could be to steal money from the company, they can be tempted when otherwise they maybe wouldn't have. Obviously, most people would not act on that temptation, but some people do, and then companies will get burned because of it.
Yeah, but even more fundamentally than that, without regard to any issues of malfeasance, the other important issue with internal control is how much reliability can a user of a financial statement put on that financial statement?
Wow.
And that's important as well.
Well, I can't believe this half hour has flown by. But
accounting is so fun, Joe.
It is. Well, we've got to take our hard break right now, but we'll be right back with more Fisher Money and Your Life after these announcements. Stay tuned. We're all saddled up and coming back with that bonanza music. Thank you, Kevin. But over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
Yeah, I want to thank some of the other folks on the ranch. our major sponsor, UBS. Mr. Michael Carrancher and Drew Freitas. Drew, I heard your mother's having some health issues. We send our best wishes. I hope she does okay. Jason Kruger, of course, with Signature Analytics. He's our guest tonight. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. His partner, Kurt Gotrow, was actually in town last week talking about cost segregation, how real estate owners can improve their cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Best Bank in San Diego, Regions Bank, with Mr. Sean Puckett. Our favorite CPAs on the planet who are real busy right now because of the grotesque uncertainty with the Bush tax cut sunsets. And they're going to be our guests next Sunday. That's Polito Epic CPAs, Paul Polito and Don Epic. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited. And last but not least, Rich Gaines, the appropriately named attorney, Rich Gaines, with Family Legacy Legal. So thank you, everybody. Very much appreciated.
What a list of VIP sponsors. And if you would like to get more information, contact information, or more about their companies, just go to iymoney.com, our website, and click on sponsors. They're all there. Phone numbers, emails, everything else.
And two more videos by Richard Musio just went up on iymoney.com last week.
On the homepage.
Soon to become YouTube.
Yes.
Soon to become children on my YouTube channel.
Absolutely. And if you want to get, and of course, Jason is Kruger is one of our sponsors, and his website is on our website, but just to let you know, it's signatureanalytics.com. So there you go.
And Jason, what's the best phone number to track you down at?
Best number to reach me is 858-228-5643.
228-5643. All right. So back to accounting and internal control. So I want to talk about the best thing and the absolute worst thing that's ever happened to accounting. And it's this little thing, this little monopoly known as QuickBooks. It's the best thing that's ever happened to accounting because it's made accounting fairly inexpensive to have for a small business, but it's the worst thing that's ever happened to accounting because so many business owners are so concerned about cost, they end up doing their own accounting, and they create these financial statements, these P&L statements and balance sheets that, well, should win some sort of prize for fiction. and that's not an intentional malfeasance or defeat of internal control. It just happens because they think they know what they're doing when they don't. So, Jason, can you comment on my comment? Because it's just what I see. I would argue that 50% of the financial statements I see that are sort of self-prepared are garbage.
Right, right. I think that we were just talking about this on the break. The great thing about QuickBooks, as Richard said, is that anyone can use it. The bad thing is that anyone can use it. And what we find a lot is that someone that doesn't have an accounting background that's using QuickBooks, if they're entering everything appropriately, straightforward, standard transactions, it works beautifully. In situations where something may get entered inappropriately, QuickBooks, it's very difficult to see how that transaction is made from an accounting standpoint. So me being an accounting mind, I like to understand what journal entry is made for every transaction being made. What are the two sides of the journal entry as we, you know, debits and credits, as we always make fun of us, as everyone listening probably makes fun of us for.
Yeah, and they've got a balance. And, you know, the other issue with QuickBooks is there is no internal control because you can go back in and you can change something or put another entry in to try to fix something That's bad internal control. But here's why this is important. Because if you're a small business owner, small and medium-sized business, and you're going out, and so let's say you're looking for financing, and you show financial statements to a banker, where the banker has a ton of questions about your financial statements, guess what? You're probably not going to get the loan. And so this is real-life application. Mm-hmm. Because you need to have a good package to give, for example, to a lender if you're looking for an equity investor in your company. Also, Jason, comment on this. If you are looking to establish a baseline to do what we call some forward-looking financial statements, things like cash flow projections and so on, if your baseline is off, guess what happens to any future-looking projections?
Right, they're worthless.
They're worthless.
Is it like the old Rodney Dangerfield joke? If the if the doctor can't cure you, he touches up the X-rays. I guess is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of getting at that. The point is that accounting was never meant to be done by people who weren't accountants. Now, I'm not saying that for job security or for me and Jason.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that it simply wasn't. And Jason, comment on this. I also tell business owners, if you're spending time on accounting or their administration, you're probably making a mistake in terms of how you're spending time anyway.
Right, and that's what we try to communicate to our clients as well. So typically in a typical situation with us is when we're introduced to a business owner or an executive at a company, we'll take a look at their accounting, and typically there's some cleanup that needs to be done. It's very rare that there isn't, and that's because somebody that's been doing the accounting that's either not qualified or the same person's been doing the accounting for a long period of time, and there's just things are being repeated on a regular basis that could be erroneous. So the first thing that we do is take time to understand the financials, understand the business, and make sure that we can clean up the financials appropriately. In many cases, the company is trying to get some financing. That's why we get called upon. And it's a very big benefit because we work with our clients to assist them with their communications, with their financial institutions, if it's a bank or if it's other investors, and providing those investors and the banks with the financial information that they need to be able to close on their loans. A situation that we've worked with recently, I essentially refused to provide the financials to the bank until I felt comfortable that they fully represented the company. In fact, I felt that the financials, when I was initially taking a look at them, were representing the company in a negative light. And yes, I wanted to make sure that the financials were accurately representing the company in a positive light that positively reflected the results of the company. In no way was I manipulating the numbers. I just felt that the way that the accounting was done in the past was not appropriately reflecting how good the company has been doing. So that's one thing that obviously we want to sit down with and make sure that our clients are getting accurate financials that can that appropriately reflect them, so that they can manage their business appropriately and produce the appropriate financial statement forecasts and budgeting as well.
Hey, some interesting news too on the QuickBooks front. Actually, not having to do with QuickBooks, but there's apparently going to be some competition for QuickBooks coming out soon. There's a company out of Australia that's funded through a publicly traded company. The product is called Xero, but it starts with an X, X-E-R-O, and it's supposed to be the software that's even better. And QuickBooks, I did a demo, and it was really, really interesting how facile or how easy to use this thing was. I don't do much accounting, so the fact that it was easy for me is sort of scary. But it's going to be interesting to see, because right now QuickBooks has almost built a monopoly, at least out here on the west coast of the United States. So, and Jason, if you ever want to, I can get you like a demo of that if you ever have any interest in peeking at that.
Definitely.
Because I know the guy who's out here on the West Coast, who's partners in that company, but I'm really interesting that there might actually be some competition now for QuickBooks.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason, in terms of representing the financial matters and financial statements of a company accurately, positively, and so on, isn't the real use, though, of financial information forward-looking?
Yes. Definitely.
Okay. Can you tell us how? Because most people think about financial statements as just something they need to give to their bonding company or their lender. But my challenge with financial information is it's reciting history. You can't change history.
Right. That's where you get to the exciting point of the business is when you're talking about the future. Most people, you talk about accounting, as you mentioned, you're always accounting for what happened in the past. Where real value is added is once you have accurate financial information, is what are you going to do with that data, and how are you going to forecast that data, and how are you going to make business decisions based off of that data? In fact, before I drove over here today, I don't want to sound too ridiculous, but I was actually budgeting and forecasting for my own business today, moving into 2013. And I would recommend anyone listening two things that's very important to do before the end of the year. Is one is make sure to contact your tax advisor, make sure to have a meeting with your tax advisor, just in case there's anything that you can be doing before the end of the year. And the second is start budgeting and forecasting for 2013 as well.
But Jason, you budgeted that you're going to make twice as much money next year as last year because you're going to have a new mouth to feed. And trust me, they're really expensive.
Right.
I've got three, so trust me. You know, the other day, one of my kids says, "Dad, how do you become rich?" And I said, "Well, don't have kids." And my wife goes, "That what a mean thing." I said, "Look, I'm just being honest with my kids. If they're going to ask me a question, I got to answer honestly. Don't have kids if you want to be rich."
You don't call them My Little Deductions, do you, Richard?
Yeah, well, in the accounting world, it's a joke because obviously, if your child is born any date during the year up through December 31st, yeah, you get your exemption.
Right.
And so, of course, the joke that everyone tells me in the accounting world is, oh, you know, make sure to get that baby out early because you get an extra couple grand out of it.
Right.
And my response is, I just want to get through the holidays.
Right.
And I think I'd be. It's much more worth it for me to be able to get through the holidays without having a baby around.
Yeah, but here, let me bring up an example about projecting. So I have friends who own businesses, and let's assume they're growing real quickly, and I'll get like this distressed, you know, and again, I don't do the kind of work that Jason does, but you're always helping out friends, right? And so a buddy will call and go, "Gee, my business is growing dramatically. Sales are way up, and I have no cash. I don't understand that. It seems like if my business was growing and growing and growing, my cash should be too. But it never does."
Right.
Why is that?
Well, there's could be various explanations for that, but part of the budgeting and forecasting process, part of what's involved with that is the cash flow process and forecasting for cash flows as well. Companies that are growing, many companies that are growing are cash strapped, and the reason for that in high level terms is because as a company grows, they're typically incurring and paying their costs before they're receiving the funds on their revenues.
No, you're buying inventory that they sell, or they're carrying receivables from customers who are buying but not paying right up front. And so your balance sheet changes dramatically. You might see things like inventory increase and accounts receivable increase while cash is decreasing.
Right.
Accounts payable might be either going up or down, depending on how your cash is going.
Typically, accounts receivable is increasing at a greater rate than accounts payable, or the terms on your receivables. One thing to look at, too, as well, it's when we meet with our clients, is the terms that they have on their receivables and their payables. You can really fix your cash flow needs pretty quickly if you just take a look at the terms on your receivables. And terms on your payables, know who you can pay on a timely basis, know who may be flexible in their payment terms, and constant communication with your clients as well to make sure that, or your customers, to make sure that they're paying you on time, and potentially even giving you can give them incentives to pay a little bit early as well in some cases.
That old problem of debt, Tom. Anyway, we've got to take one more break here. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money, Your Life after these words. Stick around. All right, we're back with our final segment of It's Your Money, Your Life with Jason Kruger of Signature Analytics, one of our premier sponsors, and Richard Musio, my co-host. So, Richard, what should we get into for the last segment?
Welcome back. Well, the year's almost over. Anybody notice that? The year's almost over?
I just noticed that.
It's just almost over. And so, again, one of the interesting things about accounting is it's usually done historically. That is to say, you're looking at the past to account for it. But like Jason pointed out, the real benefit of historical accounting is establishing some sort of baseline to look forward to, do some projections and cash flow planning and growth plans and so on for your business. So Jason, as we approach 2013, if you had a couple of sage pieces of advice for our listeners who own businesses, you sort of mentioned one of them, sit down with your tax advisor before the end of the year. But forget about, we got income tax guys on next week, so we'll talk to them about that. What would you tell business owners that they should look at in terms of making New Year's resolutions to make their accounting and their business better?
Mm-hmm. Making the assumption that their historical accounting information is accurate. Let's say that we've already been working
with
them.
That's a big assumption, but let's assume that.
I think, as Richard mentioned, sitting down with your tax advisor is very important. You want to make sure that proper tax planning is being implemented and put into place. prior to the end of the year, just in case you can take advantage of anything that can be done prior to year end. Beyond that, and we work with our clients and sit down with their tax advisors. We actually are not competition to their tax advisors. We actually complement their tax providers. So we like to establish a good relationship with our clients' tax providers and complement their services. And then moving forward, as we talked about, as far as planning, budgeting, and forecasting, very important that your company has a strong financial budget and forecast that is tied into expected cash flows moving forward. So, we like to work with our companies in the near term cash flow projections and then an extended longer term approach as well. And the longer term approach obviously is going to be updated throughout the year as things change, because things are going to change. The projections are what they are. You can project as well as you can looking forward 6 to 12 months. They're going to change, and you want to make sure that you are appropriately making the decisions, the right decisions based on that change.
Yeah, and let me give you an example about why forecasting is important. I'll be careful not to mention any names, but I have a friend who used to own a multitude of pizza franchises, and he owned them for many, many years, and he did very well. And then in 2008, we sort of had this economic downturn. And the other thing that happened in 2008, which most people don't know about unless they're in the pizza business, the cost of cheese went way up. Mm-hmm. And so he got a call one day from his internal. He was just using a total internal function. He had what was called the CFO, but the CFO is really more of a controller. A controller to me is somebody who does historical financial statements. A CFO, chief financial officer, somebody who sort of looks more at the future. But whatever you call this person, CFO or controller, been doing, you know, had been with the company the whole time. And there was like two, there was a receivables and a payables clerk. And he, one day my client gets a phone call from the controller, and the controller says, you need to put $75,000 in the bank by tomorrow so we can meet payroll. Okay, well, now, the owner hadn't put money in the business since he started it like 15, 16 years ago and built this thing up to 15 or 16 locations. But nobody, not even the controller, saw it coming, because there was no forward-looking cash flow or budget. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine getting that phone call?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point is... you're forecasting your costs as well. So the owner typically in a situation like that probably knows or has heard that the price of cheese may be increasing. Hasn't really necessarily potentially thought how it may apply to his business and may only think that it's a smaller increase than it really is. But when you apply it to your business and you forecast it out, you can see the impact that it might have. And that will give you the time to make decisions to either raise pricing, negotiate a better deal on the cheese that you are purchasing.
Or just cut the cheese altogether.
Yeah, right? Cut the cheese.
Or serve cheeseless pizza. Right.
Or at least you know you got this coming 4 months in advance instead of the day before.
Right.
So, Jason, when you do forecast, do you do like best, average, and worst case forecast? In other words, more than one for a business, depending on how things might play out?
Yeah, we do that. We try to do, a lot of cases, we'll do three different scenarios. A good example of actually is a company that we're working with. They have a line of credit. They're a distributor and a food. And they have a line of credit with Wells Fargo Bank. And we provide, we are regularly updating those forecasts. And we are also providing that information to the bank to provide the bank with assurance that the company is moving in the right direction. As things change, we keep our lines of communication open with the bank. Because the last thing that we want to do is create any surprises when you have a line of credit and you have no planning in place for any potential situations that might come up.
All right, we got about a minute to go. I have one more really important question about demographics. Would we expect to see more and more good accountants out there in the marketplace as time goes by, or fewer and fewer good accountants?
That's a tough question.
Because I think it's less and less, because young people aren't going into the accounting profession. I was just curious what you think.
I was just going to say that. It seems like, you know, the accounting is not a sexy degree, I don't think. Obviously, and I think that the accounting profession is changing. I actually heard a great speaker last Tuesday. His name was Richard Musio.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
speaking about the accounting profession and what the accounting profession will look like in 2025. And if you think it's just taxes and audits and tax providers, then That's what we don't see. It's becoming more of a commodity on that end, and how you differentiate yourself as a practice outside of being a nice individual and responsive to your clients.
Well, you can be a CPA and become a great financial consultant and handle people in biotech, manufacturing, software, consumer business, financial services.
But trust me, accounting is all about the future. That's what Jason is great at.
Absolutely. Anyway, Jason, thanks for being our guest tonight.
Jason, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
It was a pleasure having you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, you can hear this podcast at iymoney.com. Just go there tomorrow. We take out the commercials. Isn't that a novel concept? Anyway, Kevin Terrell, thank you on the soundboard. Thank you to Don Blanke and Carmen Cheely, our con executives.
That's Craig Blanke.
Craig Blanke, whatever I said. Dave Sniff, our program genius. And you have a great week. Stay warm, everybody, and we'll see you next Sunday night.
Hey, this is Mike Slater, and it's just been so amazing to be hearing the stories every single morning about all the good that Salvation Army does right here in San Diego, literally saving lives every single day. You know that sound, right? It's the sound of Christmas. It's also the sound of the Salvation Army Red Kettle volunteers. They're outside stores in San Diego, rain or shine, diligently taking our donations, pennies, nickels, dimes, whatever you got in your pocket. Problem is, not as many people are carrying change around like they used to. That's why we have our online Red Kettle Drive. All you got to do is go to 760kfmb.com, click on the Red Kettle to donate to my kettle, or you can even create your very own Red Kettle. All you got to do is go to 760kfmb.com, and it's all written out right there how you can make this happen. Your donation, as you've been hearing every morning, saves lives. Just tune in every Monday through Friday from 6 till 9 this holiday season, and you'll hear so many more stories of San Diegans who have been saved by the Salvation Army. 760kfmb.com. Let's continue to do the most good.
We follow the story, and we